This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. You can buy plants from a greenhouse to start your home garden or start it from seeds. Either way will work, but there's a much greater variety of plant and flower seeds available locally and online than seedlings you can typically find at the garden store. Joining us with suggestions on choosing and preparing seeds for planting in your garden and to answer your questions are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. David, Sarah, and Joshua, good to see everybody this afternoon.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
You know, David, I've barely got a green thumb as it is, David. You know that, and I think of this idea of making the transition from using a seedling, transplanting a seedling, to starting by seed, and it kind of terrifies me. I mean, how difficult is this?
It isn't tough. It's the most important thing if you're going to start your own is having good lighting, and if you have a south-facing window, you can use that, but generally, the people who have really good success starting seeds indoors use artificial lights. And of course, now we've got the LED lights, which are just super bright and have all the spectrum needed. But I think it's a lot of fun. It gets you gardening early. You're doing things and getting ready for the season. And, you know, the great thing about starting your own seeds for transplant is that you're getting varieties that you want. And sometimes when you go to a garden center, you end up getting what they want you to grow, and they don't always have the selection of maybe your favorite tomato. And so this way you can buy the seed and start it on your own.
Sarah, are there certain seeds that are easy to start and certain seeds that are a little tougher maybe that need a more controlled environment when you're starting them?
I love greens, so spinach, lettuce, those are super easy. If you're thinking of flowers, you know, cosmos are really easy, marigolds are really easy, zinnias. So, in fact, tonight, my three-year-old daughter and I will be planting our flower seeds, and it's always really fun. And then also another fun activity to do outside is if you have the space, building a small little cold frame. And that's just basically a very low greenhouse. You know, if you have a spare window, an old window, that would work perfect. And, you know, you could reuse, recycle materials that you have found around. So I'm actually going to be planting. Hopefully it doesn't rain too much tomorrow or maybe even Friday, because you never want to plant when the soil's too wet. And so, yeah, we'll get that out and get that soil warm and germination will occur. It'll be great.
Is it more fun to do it this way, you think?
I think it is. You know, it's one of those things I feel like I've accomplished something. You know, you plant this tiny little seed, and some of the smallest seeds, like radish seeds and beets and carrots, are so tiny. And working with kids, and you see the different colors and sizes and all this, and then you get a crop out of it, you know. It's pretty fabulous, you know. Yeah, I enjoy it.
And turning something that is not currently living into a living creature, that's something, especially with the younger volunteers in the gardens, they really, really take to that.
Yeah, it has to be very satisfying, Joshua.
It is.
You've got your seeds going already, don't you?
Yeah, so I've been working in the greenhouse to make transplantable plants later, but I actually just seeded yesterday. It was a nice sunny day, and I've had clear plastic over some of my rows in the gardens to warm that soil up. So with that preparation, yesterday was a nice warm day. My soil was dry, so I went ahead and planted radishes, carrots, and turnips, which are all cold hardy. They can take a little bit of that frost, and if we're going to get to the freezing, there is a possibility that I lose them. But my thinking is if I spend $10 in seeds and lose the $10 in seeds, it's worth the risk that I might get a lot of food out of it later on if I don't get that frost or that freeze.
So how do you decide what things to plant, David?
Oh, I think it's, you know, for me, it's I want to have a specific tomato varieties, as well as in my garden, I have a disease on peppers called bacterial leaf spot. And so I only grow peppers that are resistant to that. And the only way that I can get those peppers is if I grow them by seed. So that's how I select what I want to do for seed. And then, of course, there's just things. I've always grown my squash, my zucchini, and all those from seed out just directly into the garden. I don't do transplants on those. I just don't think it doesn't warrant the work for me. I just put them directly into the soil. But I think, one of the things that people need to realize is learn as much as you can about the given seed that you're going to plant, because peppers, generally, they are just notoriously slow to germinate, and they can be up to 10 days before you'll actually see a little sprout come through, whereas tomatoes, you've got 3 days, and I think a lot of people will give up on a pepper planting or the seeding of pepper transplants because they just didn't germinate, but lo and behold, they are germinating. They just take a long time to do that.
How long are seed packets viable? I mean, if you find a seed packet that maybe you bought it 5 years ago or last year or a couple of years ago, is that packet still any good? Or do you?
It depends what it is. And, you know, they have actually collected seeds from pyramids in Egypt and germinated them. So some of them will last a long time. And I think I've gone to antique stores where they'll have the old seed containers and actually bought some of those, taken them home and germinated some of the seed that were in there. So some seeds last a long time.
And the rule of thumb that I've always heard is each year that the seed is left over, it loses 10% of its germination rate. So if you plant 100 and the seed's 5 years old, you might only get a 50% germination rate after that.
You know, speaking of germination, I did the paper towel technique, put some seeds in paper towels, and it just didn't turn out very well. So how do you make germination work? Is it better just to plant it and let it go, or should you start it germinating before you plant it? Or
So water and warmth is the key things. Seeds like a 70 to 80 degree, most seeds like 70 to 80 degrees, the soil temperature to properly germinate. And then you have to make sure you keep it moist. You don't want to water it every single day because you like that soil to dry out. Otherwise, you're going to deal with some rot issues. Your seed might actually rot in the soil. But to achieve that, I go out and purchase seed mats. If we don't have a nice greenhouse and you're doing it at home, they sell very inexpensively a seed mat that'll get that soil temperature to the proper temperature to ensure quality germination.
Now, I had heard, too, that putting some seeds in the freezer before you plant in soil is something. Is that a good idea? Or doesn't sound like a Josh. But
For certain seeds, yes. They really do like it.
Not at that 70 to 80 degree range, but colder?
Well, to put them in the freezer, they say like a week before on certain seeds. I know garlic loves to overwinter. So if you don't plant your garlic in the fall, like most do, you can get away with freezing your bulbs in the freezer and then planting them in the spring. They will still be a little bit behind of the fall, but they seem to grow quicker when they've been frozen.
Okay. So that is a good idea.
Yeah, grass seed, a lot of people, you know, they'll put that in the freezer. There are certain seeds that does work really well.
Should you soak the seeds in water before you plant them?
I do not, unless it's a specific seed with a really hard seed coat. And then I think you're warranted in doing that. You know, that'll just kind of soften that seed coat and you'll get quicker germination. And usually it's done kind of in lukewarm water, not hot by any means, but lukewarm, and just let them sit overnight. And that'll soften that coat and you'll be ready to, you'll see, you know, much better germination.
I like to do that with beets, beans, and peas. I think all three have really hard shells. So I won't do it any more than about 8 hours, I think.
Now, what's I've heard the term scarification. What is? I think I was saying that right.
Right.
What is that exactly? And which seeds need that?
Anything with a hard, really hard seed coat. And the ones that I come to mind to me are tree seed coats, such as pawpaws would be one that. And scarification is just that you are kind of you're nicking or you're filing down that seed coat a little bit so that it makes it easier for it to absorb water. And then it'll germinate much quicker. Kentucky coffee tree is a great one that has a really hard seed coat. So if you just kind of you'll file it a little bit. Sandpaper will work. And some people there are in the magazines and the research they actually will put them in an acid bath, something like that, just to break that seed coat a little bit.
You ever heard fingernails work too?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And speaking of pawpaws, I finally germinated some seed, and I have little pawpaw seedlings. I call them my little babies. So, but those took about a month to germinate. So once I pulled them out of the refrigerator, I put those in the vegetable section in the refrigerator, and then I put them in soil, and Yeah, it took them a long time. So be patient. If you need resources on, you know, how to properly germinate seeds, do you need to scarify them or stratify, just needing cool temperatures, we have a publication.
Yeah,
for that.
Explain stratification a little bit more there, Sarah.
It's just what we were talking about before. Their cool period of what they need. Some seeds need a certain cool period. Like pawpaws, they need, I believe it's a 90-day cool period. And then they do need to be stratified as well, scarified when that, you know, you nick them a little bit.
And if you have any questions about seeds or about gardening in general, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email us, talk@wvxu.org. Are there some plants, Joshua, where it just makes more sense to start from seed and others that it makes more sense to go out and buy the seedling and start it that way?
Well, I always recommend people to start off slow. So maybe you buy some transplants some years, and then start off maybe only starting one thing from seed. That way it's a little bit easier. You're not trying to start tomatoes and peppers and eggplants and all kinds of different things from seed. Maybe you buy your tomatoes and eggplants and start your peppers. I think that peppers are an easy one. Like Dave said, it does take a little bit longer to germinate those, but I think once the pepper is out of the soil, they're typically really easy to take care of. They just like to be hot. So I think peppers is a good place to start. I always like to chard. I always start my chard indoors. I think it's another easy one to care for once it's been germinated.
You know, we talk about starting things in a pot. I've actually seen videos of people starting seeds in an eggshell.
Yeah.
Does that work? Is there an advantage to doing it that way, David?
I don't know that there's any advantage. It's just something that, you know, it's you can recycle it that way. And you have to watch the drainage, of course. The eggshell will hold water. So you would either have to be very careful how you water it, or you'd have to put a tiny hole in it so you get drainage. But I've seen people do any kind of thing imaginable to start seeds in.
Anything biodegradable. I mean, biodegradable pots. I did try the eggshell myself. My hands aren't very dainty, you know, and so they broke, to be honest. After, you know, I put the soil in there and, you water, and then I'm like, okay, no. So it's organic material. I didn't worry about it. I just laughed at myself. So.
I've seen the paper egg cartons be used because there's 12 spaces, and you can easily put a hole, and they are biodegradable. Now, when the plant gets big enough, if you don't take it out of that small container, it will get root bound. So you have to be mindful that there is as many roots below the soil as there is plant above the soil, so that you can kind of gauge how many roots you have. That way it doesn't get root bound, because that'll affect you later on in the season.
So is there a certain type of you use potting soil when you start your seeds, Joshua, or is there a certain type of mix that you use for starting the seeds?
I've developed my own kind of mix over the last 7 years, kind of borrowed a little bit of it from Elliot Coleman, who I think is a really great resource for organic gardening. There are commercial potting soils, and that they're great. I actually start with a commercial potting soil called Planting Pro from a company here in Ohio. And then I add some ingredients to it. I always recommend my two secret ingredients for my potting soil is worm castings, which is a very readily available nitrogen source for plants. A little bit more expensive, but I think it goes a long way. And I use green sand as well, which is full of micronutrients.
Green sand.
It is basically a mineral concoction, and it has all the little micronutrients, magnesium, boron, all the things that we don't typically talk about. And I think that sets the plant up for a healthy beginning, really ensures a healthy lifetime of the plant.
Whatever you do, don't use soil from your backyard to start seeds. That's just, I think we magnify all the bad properties of a soil, our clay soils, when we put them in a pot and try to grow seeds in them and bring them inside. Potting mixes that you can buy commercially, they're not cheap, but they're probably worth their weight in gold for starting seeds. It's they have a wetting agent in them. They may have a little bit of fertilizer in them, and they're just they're super for that. And of course, there's just many different kinds on the market, but I definitely would invest in something like that.
And there is a difference between compost, potting mix, and garden soil. So when you're doing anything, starting seed or mixed container gardening, make sure you get potting soil. Garden soil is going to stay way too wet, and you'll get root rot or just poor germination or no germination. So just be aware that there is a difference between garden soil and potting soil.
And how do you know if you're giving the plant enough water or too much water?
Should be a seedling, I think, constantly moist but not soggy, and I don't know I don't know how to tell you, but you can tell by how much I mean, I almost like them to dry out a little bit in between waterings, but then you really can run into some diseases and things like that, damping off disease, if you overwater and keep them soggy. So you want to make sure that there's plenty of air movement around them. And just, even watering.
Yeah, so make sure, you're going to have less watering, when you first plant the seed and before germination. So, of course, once the plant germinates and you get the first true leaves, and then you'll increase your watering because the plant will then have roots and uptake water. So just be aware of that as well. So you may only water one time, twice before germination starts, and then you may have to increase that.
And I always recommend erring on the side of dry than too wet. There's not a lot of things that, a plant being too dry, there's not a lot of negative effects of that. A plant being too wet, you get into all sorts of things there. So much like Dave, I like to let them dry out individually. I'll almost let them just barely start to droop a little bit. I like the soil to come off the sides of the pot just a little bit, and then I know it's time to water.
Dale joins us now at 513-419-7100. Good afternoon, Dale.
Hi there, everybody. I was just going to comment that I usually started my plant trays either on the freezer or on the top of the refrigerator. And the first sign of anything sprouting, I would then move it under my shop lights as close as I could get them. And I always watered from the bottom. I didn't water the plants. I water underneath them, the tray they're sitting in, so they wouldn't get water on their leaves.
Yeah, those are all great points, and you're getting the bottom warmth from the refrigerator, and using the shop lights really works. And as you said, getting those down on top of the seedlings, most people put them too far away, but you want to put those on a chain, and as the seedlings grow, move the chain up. But initially, have those almost on top. The grow lights and the shop lights just, they're good, but they're not as effective as sunlight is. So you have to leave them on longer and get them closer to the plant.
Are you better off getting a grow light? Or it sounds like for him, it worked.
I think as long as you're putting it close enough, the CFL bulbs, which are what we call shop lights, they don't put off heat, which is great. So you can really put them almost on top of the plant. Mm-hmm. And I try to, like Dave said, not any more than an inch above the top of the plant and raise it up as they go. Otherwise, if it's too far away, they'll get leggy. And they're just not as vigorous of a plan after that. It's hard to come back from legginess.
513-419-7100 if you have any questions about seeds or any gardening questions, and let's talk to Vicki. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks so much for your program.
Thank you.
I just had kind of a fun comment. I have a lot of seeds. Most of them I keep from plants that I produce, so my beans and peas and things like that. And I date them. And I had gone through this year, and I cleaned them out because a lot of them were quite old, 5, 6, 7 years old. And I tossed all the old seeds into my little compost pail that I keep underneath my sink and just piled more compost on top of it. And when I went to take it out to the compost bin in the backyard and dumped it, I had probably 30 or 40 plants. And I was turned away and was like, oh, no. And it was too early. You can put them out in the garden.
Yeah.
Yep.
I put it in my compost bin. I thought it'll be interesting to see what happens. I had other squash and things like that I've pulled out of the compost bin that have sprouted.
Yeah. And Vicki, you're breaking up just a little bit, but it sounds like maybe Vicki's onto something here, that maybe if you don't try too hard, maybe if you're not really intense about getting them to grow, that it works better. I don't know.
So for a commercial garden, that's probably not your best tactic, because you really want, a great germination rate. But, for a home gardener, why not?
You always hear about people who throw their pumpkins or their squash in their compost bin, and lo and behold, you'll get new plants coming right out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just let nature take care of things, right? Mm-hmm. So once you do move them, what's the best way to move them move the plants without damaging them at the
I like – if they're indoors, I think one of the things that we would all agree on is you want to get them kind of hardened off and acclimated to the outside sun, wind, and that environment and the cooler nights. And so you want to maybe do that gradually. There's a lot of ways that you can do it. But I like to get if they're growing in a greenhouse or in a really warm home environment – outside's going to be a kind of a shock to them. And so you want to acclimate them to that a little bit before you put them straight into the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Stage it. Yes.
Do you use the dirt they were germinated in, or do you?
I just move the entire pot outside and I'll start day one, maybe put them out in part shade for an hour or two, bring them back in. Then the second day, maybe leave them in the same spot, part shade, maybe 2 or 3 hours the second day. And if you're doing it professionally, it's like a 7 to 10 day process. It's very rigorous. I think the home gardener can get away with not being so rigorous because we all have other things to do in life. So at least as long as you're bringing them out a few days before you're actually planting them outside, I think that's it's going to go a long way.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join us in the conversation about seeds and about gardening. What about thinning seedlings? Is that a good idea as they go along so the stronger ones can grow better?
Absolutely. It's a great idea.
Sometimes we don't always practice what we preach,
man.
But, you know, especially the root crops, carrots, you know. But it's so hard because, as I was saying before, they're so tiny. So, you know, after a while, you know, you're like, okay, my spacing. But that's also another fun winter activity is doing these, what they now call seed tapes. And you can buy them, actually, or you can just do those yourself if you need instruction on how to do that. Because that will, you'll already have, they're pre-measured, and then you just lay them out in your rows. But if you don't get around doing that, then yes, thinning is best. But
when seeding, I had to teach a seed starting class last night, actually, and I was trying to stress to people overseeding carrots, which is very common because carrot seeds are tiny. It's hard to place them 1 inch apart. It's a very tedious thing. But thinning is also very, very tedious. So proper seed spacing is very important, especially when you're direct seeding. And then when I'm starting my seeds indoors in my greenhouse, I always put 2 seeds per pot.
Mm-hmm.
That way, because if you don't have good germination, it's kind of almost too late to go back and try to re-germinate things. So I'm really ensuring that I get, it's a little bit of an extra seed cost, but I make sure that I get all the plants that I need for my springtime garden. And then I just pull the one that doesn't look as good if both come up.
I have a number of bad habits in gardening, and one of them is just I overseed everything, and I put way too many in there, but I can't stand to have a row that has skips in it.
Yeah.
So I just way overdo it, and I will sometimes have to thin 2 and 3 times to get the carrots at the right spacing. And it's a waste. It's you know, I'm wasting a lot of seed, but I can't.
But you can eat those greens, David, you know, on your salad, you know, those smoothies that you make.
Yes, that's it.
You know,
from now on.
You know, you shouldn't throw them away. Hey, you can repot them or replant them in another spot because the roots are already there, you know.
And since David's our expert on goofing things up, what do you think is the most common mistake that people make in this whole process, especially maybe when they're moving the plants out into their garden? Mm.
Probably seeding at the wrong time. If you sow your seed of tomatoes or peppers way too soon, then you've got plants ready to go in mid-April and it's too cold outside. And so you have to keep them shorter and try to slow them down. Or simply, you know, April 15th, you decide, well, I'm going to seed some tomatoes and peppers. And, you know, they're not going to be ready for 8 weeks. And so you've kind of missed some of the season. So I think, you know, getting the publication that Sarah talked about and finding out how many weeks it is for to start seeds and how many weeks before the frost-free date, which in this area I'm saying is going to be May 5th to 10th, somewhere in there. And so after that, we can go out and we can sow all of the warm season crops in our gardens. But up until that time, we've still got some iffy weather.
Yeah, but you talk about keeping them shorter. Do you mean topping them off or cutting off several leaves?
You can do that with some of them, but really it's not a good idea, and it really kind of stunts the plant. So, and as you know, when Josh talked about their legginess, and they will stretch, and that's not as good a transplant going into the garden. And, you know, it may recover, but you've probably lost some yield if you do that.
And since we've used the word a couple of times, what do you mean by legginess?
Go ahead.
So it's just when your plant gets, the stem gets really, really tall, you want, the inner node spacing and the node spacing, which is just basically where your branches come off of your central stem, you want that to be a small spacing in between your nodes. And so, for example, if your first two sets of true leaves are, 3 or 4 inches off the soil, it's going to get really leggy, and the plant doesn't conduct water and minerals very well. It leads to a whole slew of health problems later on, and they'll just plain over fall over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another bit of advice too, especially on our fruit plants, tomatoes and peppers, if they start developing flowers before you put them out, make sure you pinch those off, because what will end up happening, fruit production takes a lot of energy from that plant. And you're not ready for fruit production yet. You want it to get a substantial size out in your garden. So just keep that in mind, too. I know we get a little impatient and we want the first juicy tomato. Make sure it's in your garden first. And I pinch off the first few after I already transplant them out in the garden as well, because I want them to acclimate, make sure that the roots are anchored down into the garden or into the soil before fruit production occurs. So keep that in mind.
513-419-7100, and Dale is on the line here. And hi, Dale.
Hello, we're back again.
Yeah, you had something else you wanted to bring up for us.
Yeah, 2 points. One was, every year when I use those trays over and over again, I make sure I dip them in bleach water, let them soak a little bit to get rid of some of the micro stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when you're talking about leggy plants, especially tomatoes, I see so many people making a mistake. They plant the thing with the neck sticking way up out of the ground instead of burying it so deeply. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had neighbors who did that, and they didn't get anything. Another thing that really bothers me, when people buy these tomato plants with tomatoes already on them,
yep,
and they think they're going to get the first tomato, that's probably the last tomato they're going to get, too. Yeah.
Yep.
That was a point that I wanted to bring up. When you're buying from commercial grow operations, is we think that we're getting a head start when we're seeing flowers on plants and even a pollinated flower, which is at that point a tomato or a pepper. It's really going to, you have to forego that early production to really get good yield later on. So I would stay away from plants that are flowering already in the greenhouse, especially when you're going to purchase these from commercial operations. And like you said, you can, not all plants, really just tomatoes, you can plant those about as deep as you can, almost down. Leave a couple of inches out, obviously, but don't go so far down that you've skipped all that good soil that you've built. I've seen that happen in some community gardens where we have 8 or 12 inches of good soil, and they'll dig an 18-inch hole, and they've bypassed all of their good soil, and the roots are in clay. So be kind of mindful of your soil layers as well.
So as far as the idea of cleaning the trays with bleach, is there a right way and a wrong way to do that?
No, I think it's 10 parts water, 1 part bleach, mm-hmm, and you can just I've used an aerosol bottle to mist them, and I've done that, let them dry, and you can use that, or just dip them in a solution like that and let them dry, and that'll take care of everything.
Yeah. I've also just stuck them out in August on a very, very sunny day and sun sterilize them. Yeah. On these 90 degree August days, if you just leave them outside in a sunny spot, I think that does a great job, and that way we don't have to necessarily use bleach. But if you want to be sure that they're sterilized, the 10-to-1 bleach solution will definitely work.
And is it important to make sure you get all the bleach off?
No, because it will evaporate, and it's not harmful at that rate.
And I've gotten the question before of, oh, well, I have extra potting soil that can I reuse it for the following year? What can I do? And I say, as long as it stays dry. So, when in doubt, at least, some on the ground or some in other potting containers, put it in your compost. But as long as your bag stays dry, you can use it then the following year.
Sarah, what about resources, places to find seeds?
Absolutely. So if you're interested in different plants for their resistance, first check out the Extension Office because we have a publication on certain characteristics of plants that you're looking for. And then also I highly recommend, especially after the first of the year, getting online, ordering some seed catalogs. They'll be glad to send them to you for free. And just start looking through them. It's a wealth of information. You can learn about different characteristics, different varieties, cultivars, colors, heights, all those things. And then from that, you know, if you have a specific question, call the seed catalog company and or call the Extension Office. We'll help you out. Whereas maybe sometimes at box stores, yes, they have certain information on the back, but you may not get the full, you know, all the details that you particularly need. So
plus the print's really, really small.
Yeah. And also, I don't know, it gives me some hope that spring's near after the first of the year and I get all these seed catalogs in the mail. It's pretty fabulous. And then I know we've talked about tools before, but not only in seed catalogs, but there are horticulture, you know, other magazines with tools, and you just get a wealth of knowledge. I mean, it's free knowledge, so enjoy it.
Yeah, David, I think you like catalogs.
Oh, if you subscribe to about any garden magazine, you're going to, they sell their list to some of these companies. Now, you can always opt out of that, but if you order a garden magazine, you're going to get catalogs. And I think it's really fun, especially during, you know, January and February when you can't do a lot, to look at those catalogs. But, you know, they glorify absolutely every offering they've got. And then it's also fun to see the new things that come out. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, I have a big enough garden that I can try a lot of those new things. And I would say 4 out of 5 of the new things I try every year, I'm disappointed in. And, you know, they sound really good, but they just haven't been proven over time. And I think of some exceptions, like Big Beef Tomato. I tried that the first year it came out, and I loved it. I thought, that's a great tomato. Going to stick with that one. And it has proven to be that. But some of the others, you've got to just, you know, a little bit of prevention or just some ideas about whether this is, you want to utilize your space on something that's not tried and true.
So, for example, like UK has a information about commercial vegetable crop production as well as home gardening, and we have a list of varieties which have been trialed at the expense of university. So I think Purdue's part of that, Ohio, a few other land-grant universities. So there's been a lot of energy and care to research, you know, these plants. So again, if you need information on variety selection, just reach out to the Extension Office.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And let's talk to Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hi, Eric. Go right ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear my name. I just wanted to supply a trick from the Lazy Man's Garden, and that is to go to local groceries year-round, actually, and you can buy plants already started. They're sold as fresh herbs, but they come in little small pots in potting soil, and they're already sometimes even a 6 or 8 foot tall. And I've done that with basil and oregano and rosemary, and I know they have some others too. The cilantro, I think, is another one. But it's quick and dirty. The soil where I live is so bad. I plant everything in pots.
Yeah.
And this gets. Yeah. I mean, I know I've already got a plant when I stick it in the pot because it's already rooted in these little tiny cubicles.
Yeah, Eric, you sound like it sounds like where I live. Joshua was talking about if you dig a foot and a half down, you hit clay. I dig an inch down, I hit clay. Yeah. That's pretty much how my whole yard is. So
yeah,
That's Ohio. That's the area.
Yeah. Eric, thank you for the call. 513-419-7100. And let's talk to Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, Linda. Go right ahead.
I planted tomato plants in a large pot on my patio. Tended them very carefully, suckered them. They grew and they did well. They had nice tomatoes, not large as they ripened. But when they ripened and I turned them over, they were black in the center.
Yeah. Every single one.
Were they from blackened from the bottom up into the center?
Yes.
That's blossom end rot. And it can be more problematic when you're growing in a pot because it's a calcium deficiency, but it's related to uneven watering. And I would suggest that maybe you not put as many plants in a single pot. Give each tomato plant should have at least 5 gallons of like a 5 gallon bucket. That would be the minimum size for one tomato plant. And I would also water regularly. And even though they're in a pot, mulching that top of that pot will really help supply and keep the moisture even in that container. And you should be able to get away from having the blossom end rot. But it's real typical to have that, especially on early tomatoes and especially in a container.
And I know heirloom tomatoes are really known to get blossom end rot. So,
and the great thing is you can come back from blossom end rot as other deficiencies. It's hard to come back from that. If you start to notice that, like Dave said, a nice layer of mulch and maybe more care to the watering. And then I don't know if you'd want to go so far as to testing that potting soil, but sometimes adding things like bone meal can, if it does truly have a calcium deficiency, can help that out, but you can definitely come back from the blossom end rot in the same season.
Oh, sorry, Josh. No, so it's still edible, you know, so just cut the black or discolored area off, process it into a salsa or, you know, slice it up. So I wouldn't discard the whole fruit.
Speaking of tomatoes, we got an email from David. He says he has a garden area that's about 10 foot by 10 foot. It's 2 years old. He built it up by using topsoil from a local landscaping company. He says he's had success with his other vegetables and fruits that he's planted in the garden, except for tomato plants. He says they just don't seem to produce. So he's wondering if anybody knows what could be the problem.
Tomato plants are deeply rooted. So I wonder if maybe the soil underneath that, his raised soil, is poor. And so he may want to kind of break that interface between the two soils and then add more organic matter and more compost to the whole mix. But those tomato root systems will go way, way beyond 10 inches. So,
and I would also get the soil tested for sure. Start with that after you add any other organic matter, as David suggested. So soil test for sure.
And I like to, like David mentioned, to break up that interface is you can cover crop with daikon radishes, which is a very largely deep-rooting radish, and it'll go through his pot, the topsoil that he's added into his base layer of soil, and it'll break up that interface in a natural way without tilling.
Adrian joins us now at 513-419-7100. Good afternoon, Adrian.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
I've enriched my soil with shredded leaves and grass clippings for 30 years. And, you know, I got black gold probably about 2 feet down. Uh-huh. And last year, it was the first year I had 16 plants. Only 3 of them gave me tomatoes. And it was the first year I put up an electric fence to keep the little bunny rabbits out. And I also was the first year I had a lawn service, just not lawn service, just for the weeds. And I put the grass clippings on because my garden's 50 by 30. And I got to control the weeds. If not, I could get 10 garbage cans full of weeds if I don't keep control of it. And so I was wondering what caused me to those 13 plants. I just got nothing. Absolutely. If I got 20 tomatoes. Other years, I just had bushels and bushels. So I'm looking at what was the problem. Was it the grass clippings?
I think you would know if you've been growing tomatoes for a long time, and if it was the grass clippings, and I think you're referring to is that they had a growth regular or herbicide on them, and you took them directly from the grass to your garden and mulched the tomatoes. But you would see twisting and gnarling of the foliage of the tomato plants, and you would recognize it right away. if it was growth regulator damage. You know, the tomato plant, probably some of them will not die, but you won't get any fruit off of them because they'll just be so distorted. The other thing, again, which Sarah said, go back to a soil sample. I think it might be a good idea to have that done. But the grass clippings could have been an issue, definitely. But I think you would really see it on the foliage.
And tomatoes, you know, they're very, very sensitive of any soil change. And so, again, I feel like you would have noticed it, too, if there was any discoloration or chlorosis or if you used fresh grass clippings, for example, and high nitrogen, you would have had that lagging too, that quick growth, which could, as we spoke earlier, cause a reduction in production. So, but start with a soil sample. And if you see any of those symptoms arise, take pictures, send it to us. We'll be able to maybe help diagnose that way.
I would also go to the company and ask them what they're putting on your lawn that might give you a good starting place.
Let's talk to Susan now. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I live in a neighborhood where there's fairly strict homeowner association rules. So home vegetable gardeners like me kind of have to hide our plants a little bit. So I can't,
what a crime.
I know, isn't that sad? I know. But I can't put up, like, chicken wire, and the rabbits think I'm running a fast food restaurant as a result.
Goodness.
And I'm just wondering, are there other effective ways? They don't seem to bother us tomatoes, but we love peppers. And the minute we plant them, everything we try, the bunnies just seem to think that was a little birthday gift for them. I'm just wondering for some advice.
Do you have them in pots?
No, we do it, like, we have this whole area that is perfectly shielded from the road, so we do it right in the soil, and we're successful in every other area. The tomatoes are beautiful, but the ones that the bunnies like, we just can't get them high enough to actually bring any fruit.
There are liquid repellents and granular repellents for rabbits, but they've got to be reapplied frequently, and I don't know how, I haven't heard that their effectiveness is great in that situation.
We did try this. It was because they were getting our snow peas, but we put chicken wire underneath the soil because for them to scratch all the little, you know, that showed a little bit of help, not much maybe. So if you combine maybe that and some of these other deterrents, maybe, but.
In our gardens, we had one particular garden that had a bunny issue, and we used what they call groundhog fencing, which is, it's essentially like chicken wire, but it has this almost like poly coating on it. And we used 48 inches, and we buried the bottom 6 inches on a flange out. That way, if the bunny tried to scratch at the bottom of the fence, he can't get under the fence. And then the 42 inches above, that's got to be a really strong bunny to get over that fence.
Terry joins us now. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I had three quick questions. Is that okay to ask?
Yeah, if they're quick, okay, that's good.
First one, in my greenhouse, should I keep a fan blowing across the plants to keep their stems strong?
Boy, absolutely.
Yes.
Not only will it keep the stem strong, but it'll also just keep away some of the damping off disease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My main question was, I have a couple of garden spots, and I have heard the benefits of no-till versus tilling, and I just really, this year, want to try something more successful to keep weeds down. Can you give some advice?
Mulching, for sure.
Yeah, mulching. And tilling is great for it. It does have its things that it accomplishes, but it also brings weed seeds that are buried too far down to germinate, and it brings them to the surface. So that's one kind of drawback I see in tilling. One alternative to tilling, but it still decompacts your soil, is the use of a broad fork, which basically gives you that same aeration and decompaction without spinning your soil around. So you might try it. I've used it with great success in my gardens.
Mm-hmm. And Terry, do you have another?
I'm sorry?
Do you have one more question, did you say?
Yeah, I did. Stink bugs have decimated my vine crops. And a very expensive commercial herbicide that I won't name, I didn't know how to get rid of them. My chickens won't eat them.
Do you have any idea on how to get rid of stink bugs for my cucumbers and pumpkins and squash?
If this makes you feel better, I just talked with the entomologist last week, and their population is starting to decline. So, yay for that.
Good. That's good to hear.
Yes.
The problem with stink bugs is the manner in which they feed on our plant. Mm-hmm. They have a needle-like, kind of almost like a mosquito, a suction that it basically bypasses the top layer of the plant, which is what we spray the pesticide on, and it feeds from the center of the plant. So almost any commercial application of a pesticide is ineffective. I think the mechanical covering your rows with things like row cover will help. And I hand pick them off and put them in a bucket of water and cover that bucket up.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to Diana's call because we've got about a minute left here, Sarah.
Okay, so systemic pesticides are the greater efficacy because of their feeding habit.
Hi, Diana. Go right ahead.
Hi. Quickly, I just like to go back to the chicken wire. I'm excited to try that method of putting it down. I do have problems with the bunnies as well, but I also use a landscaping cloth. Do I put that over top of it or underneath?
Over the top. I landscaping cloth. I mean, that must be that would go on the ground.
Right. So, and they mentioned laying the chicken wire on the ground to keep the rabbits from scratching.
Yeah, Josh, so I recommend actually having a barrier fence and actually digging down and burying 6 inches of that fence. But I do have it going up in the style of a fence, and I have it like a vertical 42 inches at least.
Is there any chance you could homemade make a really attractive fence around it? I mean, you could make them so that they would be rabbit proof, go into the ground a little bit and, you know, maybe paint it white and, I know that's a lot of trouble, but if it's not too big.
And put a climbing vine up there.
Or put some shrubs in front of it to hide the fence.
Yeah, yeah.
And Diana, we got about 30 seconds. Was there something else you wanted to bring up?
Great. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is that I've had really great luck growing what's called a cucamelon, which are grape-sized cucumbers. They're kind of citrusy. They are delicious. And they grow really great along the fence or like a lattice. I have started them in pots, but I've also grown them right in the
cucamelons.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I bought some seeds this year. I'm very excited to plant them.
Perfect.
Thank you, Diana, and thanks to all of you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Here and Now is next on 91.7 WVXU.